Welcome to the Naked Wine Podcast.
Two best friends and wine. Natural and free.
Skin contact sometimes. Unfiltered, never fond. Organic grapes and yeast.
Welcome to the Naked Wine Podcast.
Episode number 17.
And we have a very special guest today. I am so excited because it's my papa, my dad, Nathan. Hi, papa.
Hi.
Hello, Mr. Wagner.
Call me Nathan, so please.
Hello, Nathan. Thank you so much for coming on today. This is like, this is the first.
Yes.
Having a relative and Kendra's dad, beloved dad up in Mendocino County.
Yeah, we're so excited. And my pops here has made his own natural organic cider this year, hard cider. So we're going to do some tastings. We're going to hear all about his process and his inspiration. And it's going to be fun.
Super fun. And this is like an episode for home brewers, anybody interested in home fermenting. This is not Nathan's full-time job by any means. He's just having fun experimenting around, and we're really excited to taste the results.
Yeah, so Papa, why don't you talk to us about what inspired you to make your hard ciders this year?
Okay. Greetings from the gorgeous, rugged Mendocino coast and the redwood trees up here. I wish I was intending to do this outside so you could see some of the beautiful scenery around us, but I'm just not that committed. It's dang cold up here right now.
Yes.
So I just didn't want to do it. I live on a retreat center, and it was formerly a hippie commune, and before it was a retreat center, but even before it was a hippie commune, it was a farm. And about 100 years ago, they planted these apple trees. These are all heirloom varieties. No two trees have exactly the same kind of apples on them. And they're getting really old. We lose about one a year through wind or storms, or like this year, we had a bear climb up into the tree and literally busted off a major branch from climbing up in the tree. So we've been here about 15 years. Initially, a lot of this fruit just went to waste. We couldn't, our own little community here, we couldn't consume it all. And then a few years ago, we started making it into cider. And the first experiment was with a little tabletop home cider press that we bought, and it was a disaster. It was so much work and not worth it at all. It was a toy, basically. And a year or two later, we found out about something called the Mendocino Food Shed. So it's a cooperative, agricultural cooperative, and they had a real press. Now, it's an old-fashioned hand press. You spin the hopper by hand, you press down the grapes, and the stuff squirts out the bottom. It's a full natural press, but it's a real one. It's something that you can actually process some apples on. And so we started doing that, and it was hard to preserve the apples. So we faced what the old pioneers faced, is that apple juice, unless you refrigerate it, or actually really you have to freeze it. So we froze a bunch of it, but it was just hard to preserve it and consume it. And so starting last year, we started making hard cider, which is what the pioneers do. The pioneers never actually drank fresh cider.
Yeah.
Mm. And so we,
for purposes of alcohol, keeping bugs and what, nasty parasites, bugs, fungi and whatnot away, huh?
Yeah. So there was a young guy that works with us here and in Kinney, and he said, we want to do a wild ferment. And I was very skeptical because my little bit of experience in the past was with beer, home brewing beer. Mm. And beer brewers are fanatical about hygiene and sterilization. In fact, historically, it was the beer brewers that learned about sterilization protocols long before hospitals and doctors did. And so your philosophy is you want to raise the wort, or the liquid you're going to make the beer out of, up to where you basically pasteurize it. Okay. And kill all the bugs. Then you carefully put in whatever yeast you want to be in there, and then you know there's only the good stuff in there. And so when he talked about a wild ferment, I was skeptical. So that's basically you wash the apples, and that's it. You press out the juice, and you just you put them in big carboys. So these look like big, like water jugs.
Okay.
Like you have at the office, except they're made of glass, of course. And about 6 gallons, 5-6 gallons. and you put a little bubbler on the top that allows, as it ferments, the gases begin to come out. So it has a little water trap, and it so allows the gases to bubble out, but nothing bad to get back in. Mm. And you just let it ferment. And I was skeptical, and he let it ferment for a while. And he brought me a sample and said, "Hey, are we ready to bottle?" And I tasted it, and I said, "Not on your life. It's too sweet." Because the thing about fermentation is it's creating the pressure. And, you know, it's actually in the Bible. Jesus said, don't put new wine into old wineskins because it'll explode and destroy it.
Oh, wow.
There was a metaphorical meaning of he was bringing in the new wine and the new wineskin. And so, yeah, it's an explosive power. And so I said, don't do it. So he let it ferment a little longer, but these young bucks don't listen to us old codgers. And so then he bottled it, and it was amazing. It was the best cider. Everybody raved on it. And then bottles started exploding.
Oh yeah,
I'm talking literally kapow. Because his cider cellar was his storage shed. So a friend of mine says he still has glass in his snow boots.
Oh my god!
Wow, I can imagine. So was it? It was delicious because what was it still a little bit sweet then? But
yeah, it was sweet. But
it had enough. It had enough fuel for the remaining yeast since you weren't using, you know, sulfur dioxide or preservatives. So it had more fuel, and the yeast went to town and kapowy, like you said.
The safe way to do it is you let it ferment completely out. So like I said, those little bubblers. You wait for the bubblers to stop bubbling.
Okay.
And then you add in a certain amount, and most people will use a sugar. If we were doing it, we would do it naturally, and we would put in some more of the juice, a certain measured amount, and then we would know exactly how much sugar we're putting in there.
Yeah.
And then you bottle it, you get your nice hard carbonation, your like champagne carbonation.
Oh wow. Awesome.
And so this year I forgot to put aside some of the juice and freeze it to add back in. So I was again on guesswork. So that's why I'm just very grateful that none of you were blown up by
well, we got two
cider.
We have two capped in front of us. We got one open one, so who knows?
And this is, okay, so this is the first one that you sent us to try from Carboy One.
Okay, that would be this one. So when I opened Carboy One, I don't know if you can see, I lost about half the contents.
Oh wow.
We only lost a tiny bit.
But she was like really careful with opening it, and it was going to fizz town. It was super fizzy.
So we'll start this so we can taste.
Oh wow, it's beautiful.
Now you'll notice it's a little bit cloudy. One of the problems with it over carbonating is then when you pop at the top, it stirs up some of the sediment from the bottom. And you don't get quite as much the nice clear clarity. So that is one of the downsides of overcarbonating.
No, that's completely fine.
We love that.
That's one of the things, like finding infiltration is kind of like one of the 10, it's not quite 10 commandments. I think I have about like the 7 commandments of natural winemaking, and finding infiltration is on there. Of not doing finding infiltration. Yes. And
so the cloudier, the better.
You know, the old staple in practice was make it clear, take away all the gunk, but like it just makes it seem like a real product rather than some sterile juice box drink that
more
you're getting
character.
On. Yeah, more character. And I'm
and
all about it.
This is beautiful. It's got like
it's really gorgeous
a caramel color, and it smells amazing. You can definitely smell some apples and even a little bit like citrusy smell.
So this is from Carboy One, and all these are a mix of apples because you said they're all just heirloom trees, so who knows what varieties, and they're all just like a big mix of.
But so I made a list of ways that this is natural, and one of them is the heirloom trees. One of them is the randomness. I think randomness is natural. So each carboy will have a slightly different mix of which varieties, it based on which crate I pulled out of the van when I was pressing the apples that went into that carboy. So it's these trees are organically grown. I call it organic neglect. We just haven't done anything to these trees, and so they are organically neglected.
Perfect. That's a new term.
Wild fermentation. We just washed the apples with tap water and then crushed them. And so whatever whatever yeasts are on and organisms are on the outside of the apple, it's basically its natural biome is what is creating the fermentation. No additives, of course, nothing to stop the ferment, which is why it kept fermenting. And you're enjoying active cultures there. That's, you know, if you poured some more sugar, you know, some more fresh juice with sugar in it, it would ferment it again. So there's all of those active cultures in there.
Love that.
And so anyway, if this is as natural as it gets.
And it's delicious, well, Pops.
You have so some good. In your glass? Well, cheers here from here. Cheers.
Cheers. Sahol, as we say on the other side of the planet.
What's the word?
Sahol.
From Azerbaijan,
means be healthy. Means be healthy.
Be healthy.
Be good. So this, be healthy. It's definitely not sweet. It's like very nicely, like a little bit tart, like good acidity. This is really good.
Really,
it's
good.
Definitely not the sweet cider that some of the ciders on the market are just way too sweet.
The hard ciders, like the ones you get at the bars, where the no offense, Angry Orchard, but it's like
offense. I mean, that's where like middle of America, because it's you turn instantly flush after drinking like a bottle or two of that, because it's like so sugary.
But this is dry, crisp, and I agree with Rem. It's got a very nice little bit of acidity. Your mouth waters a little bit. So good.
Yeah, this is Angry Orchard that joined the Peace Corps, and then when it got out, went to a hippie commune.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that path. I fully support that. So, like you said, you kind of labeled them carboy 1, 2, 3, or it just kind of depends how you pulled them out, and that's how you numbered them.
Right.
I'm jumping ahead here. I see carboy 2 says something about like half full. Were there any differences between like, I guess, this one and 2 and 3?
Yeah, there's a couple differences. So carboy 1, we were pulling out the samples to try to see whether it was ready to be bottled. And of course, I was just guessing. I needed some sugar still in it, but not too much. Mm. And I think I guessed a little too much. So carboy, and also I pulled some out when I knew that I was going to a conference, or I was gonna see some friends of mine over in Chico, California. And so I pulled out about 12 bottles worth and bottled it, knowing I was going to consume it within a day or two and that it wasn't going to explode. And so that's why that one was a little less full. And I didn't know how that was going to influence its final stage of fermentation. Another difference between the carboys is carboy 1 and 2, I bottled on November 12th.
Okay.
And then carboy 3, I waited 2 more days before I did it. But now I should also say these were all pressed on September 28th.
Okay.
So about 6 weeks or so of primary fermentation before we bottled them for the secondary fermentation.
Nice. Got it. And okay. You didn't have remaining juice, so you didn't add. You didn't ferment them fully and then add more. Correct.
Yeah. With this year? Yeah. Right. So this is just fermented until I
you
just
guess. Good guesswork. How do you know? How do you guess correctly and not have all these explosive bottles?
I know.
Did you use any tools, or did you?
There are tools, and I'm going to use them next time. I'm going to get a little more scientific about it next time. Either get scientific and try to measure the amount of ferment of sugar that's left, or I'm going to just go to what I was saying. What I'll do is because I can't just keep it in the fridge. It'll ferment itself. So I'll have to freeze some of it, and then pour into the fully fermented, back in, and then do it that way.
That makes sense. Very nice.
Well, I hope another thing next year, though, because it's delicious.
Well, another thing you might be tasting is, and this is another kind of accidental thing, is I was leaving on a trip when we had to pick them, and the picking is a big job. And so I needed some help. We run schools, courses here on our retreat center. And so I needed to enlist my resident willing slave labor to pick them. And so I was leaving on a trip in 2 days. And so I needed to pick them and then press them. And then I was going to leave on my trip. Yeah. And so we just had them pick a whole bunch of apples. So some of these apples actually got picked a little unripe, which means they were a little tart. So if we were, you know, like I'm sure in the winemaking business, they, you know, they're judging exactly when the sugar is at the maximum. And so we kind of did the opposite with that. We got a lot of this that wasn't at its very sweetest, but in some ways I like it because it the juice then had a little bit lower sugar content, but it was more tart.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what you're
tasting. Personal preference and taste. And we definitely enjoy
higher acidity.
Some people like drink the wine that we drink and
they're like, woo!
Kombucha, it's
kombucha, but that's what we like.
Your taste buds change a little.
That's interesting. Some people have actually compared this cider to kombucha. They say, oh, it has a little bit of a kombucha taste.
I totally agree.
I could see that. Yeah, her partner Mark I don't know if he's in it. He went on a huge, I call it boozy booch, but hard kombucha.
Kick.
I don't know if that's still his thing or not. But this is really delicious.
I know, I'm excited I'm almost done with
mine. I'm curious. Well, we have to, so we can open up the second bottle and give that a taste. I'm curious to see if air in the carboy or in the primary fermentation did anything, because with carboy 1, was it full almost to the top?
Well, you got to leave a little bit of space because it does foam. There's a little bit of foaming up on the top, and so you have to leave a little space. But no, it was pretty much full.
All right, I'm opening up two.
Okay, I'm gonna.
This one didn't bubble over at all for us when we got.
Mine too. So yeah, that's interesting. So here's another thing, and look at it. And as a result, it's coming out. Mine's coming out a little clearer.
Yes. Us
it's
too,
like a
us
golden.
That
color wise. What did we say the first one? Color wise.
It was like caramel.
Yeah, it was like a pale caramel. This one is more like golden.
Yeah.
This one kind of has a typical
a little more clarity.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be honest, this one tastes my first sip, at least, it tastes a little bit more like I want it to taste. I don't like the chalkiness of the sediment getting stirred up. I want the sediment to stay at the bottom of the bottle.
Carboy 2, very similar to Carboy 1, bottled on the same date, but half full during fermentation.
It does have a little bit of a different taste.
The aroma is more apparent in this one, I would say, than the first carboy.
It almost smells a little yeasty or something to me.
Yeah, a little yeasty. It smells more like champagne. Yeah. Like almost like some champagne.
You get some of that ready yeasty, which I love. And it's super, super lively on your tongue and fizzy.
It's really good.
It's really good.
I don't know if it's just perception or like I don't know if it's any bit sweeter than the first. It tastes slightly sweeter than the first. The first one was very, very bone dry. Like kombucha. And kombucha can be pretty bracingly tart or acidic. But this one is like really well balanced, definitely not sweet or overly sweet, but like a little bit.
It has a little more like a full bodiness or something to it. Fills up your mouth a little differently.
I wonder if that's anything to do with the oxygen, because it's not like you put, I don't know, I think you can put some sort of stabilizing gas in the remaining space during fermentation with some wine, but you just left it half full, and so it was just oxygen sitting in the carboy.
Well, it would have been oxygen for a short time, because then the CO2 that's bubbling out is going to fill that eventually, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The other variable that I'm going to eliminate next year is this was all done very low tech. So these carboys, for any kind of fermentation, you want it to happen in the dark. That's why like beer bottles are always kind of dark, like these, because your beer gets a skunky taste if it gets the light on it. So I went and we have a little little shed. A little cooperative shed with clothes, used clothes. If people have clothes they're not using, they put it in their shed. And whoever needs it pulls it out. We call it the boutique. It's a little pretentious for what it is, just this little shed.
Love it.
So I went into the boutique and I found 3 black t-shirts. And I put my t-shirts over my carboys. And one of them was this Darth Vader t-shirt.
So gosh.
And just to keep the, no light. And they were in a dark shed anyway, but a little light gets in. And then I realized we had a cold snap, and you want it, there's a certain temperature range that fermentation takes place in it. And you want it to happen slower and near the bottom of the temperature range.
The range.
You get a better flavor that way. You can make it happen a lot quicker if you just heat it up to 75 degrees or something.
Yep.
I was happy for it to be cool, but then I thought, well, I don't want to get too cold and kill my yeast or anything. So I actually put a little heat lamp in there. Of course, I didn't want any light on it. So I had a like this piece of wall board with the heat lamp on it, and then the wall board radiating out just a little bit of heat to keep it from freezing. Go ahead.
Off the top of your head, do you know, like, what would be the rough fermentation range, like suggested or ideal fermentation?
I think it depends on the yeast, but so this is a wild ferment, so it's anybody's guess, but it's somewhere in the, if you get much below 60, you're going to stop. It's going to slow down or really slow down a lot.
Yeah.
And then if you get too low, you could even kill it.
Mm. Yeah.
Hence why, like, if you know, for all the quarantine homemade sourdough starter bread people that pick that up, like, you know, stick your mother's starter in the fridge until next use, it'll just gonna stay idle without killing it. But very interesting. There's a lot of really good tips. So if you're fortunate enough to have an abundance of 100-year-old neglectedly organically farmed apples, tip number one might be get a proper press or rent one or bring it to some place with a proper press. Cause like the ones you can buy online that are like a good deal are probably too good to be true. And like you said, more of a pain in the butt than what they're worth. Dark place.
I was
a temperature.
I was visiting home. Remember Pops when it was getting colder and it was so funny. I was out there with Dad and we were,
messing around with these?
These cardboard boys with like the Darth Vader t-shirts and this like blocking light wall and the heat lamps.
That's awesome.
I mean, this is like pampered hard cider.
This is your cider, so you can do whatever you want, but I totally think you need to name it. And I think going to your boutique and picking a t-shirt and whatever theme is on the t-shirt is what it gets, what that batch gets named. So this is, we're drinking, well, who knows if this one's Vader or not, but like that'd be really cute way to like name your batches for every year.
I like it. Well, our preliminary working title was the young man that started me on this last year is named Kenny Willer. So and my last name's Wagner. And then in the midst of this, we had our first grandbaby, Kendra's niece, Aurora. One of her middle names is Wilder, and it's a wild ferment. So we're calling it Willer Wagner Wilder Cider.
Willer Wagner Wilder Cider. I love
Willer Wagner Wilder Cider. Perfect.
Do you think like if you put this away in like in the fridge or something, or in a you know, like fit, like you do with wine, like at, you know, 50, 60 degrees for 21 years until she's old enough to drink, would it be good?
Well, that's, maybe I should keep one. Maybe
you should keep one and give it to her
on her 21st birthday.
Maybe the carboy too that isn't quite as explosive.
Yes. I think you should. You should save one in the outdoor fridge, and
especially since her name or middle name's a part of it. And so and wild fermentation.
Well, we lived for Kendra grew up in a place called Azerbaijan on the other side of the world, and it's right next to the Republic of Georgia. And in Georgia, they do that. They'll actually, when because they have a ancient wine making tradition, and they have these jars. You've probably seen these jars that come to a point at the bottom.
Where
they come to a point is they bury them. So when the tradition is when a girl is born, you bury one of those huge jars of wine in the ground, and then on her wedding day, you unearth it.
That's so cool.
For some ladies, you have to wait a long time.
No.
But Georgia, I mean, it's so interesting. Like, arguably, it dates back to have the birthplace of like winemaking tradition.
Yeah,
around that country.
I think the oldest wine in the world.
That's what they claim. Mm-hmm. And archaeologists, like some of them, confirm that.
It's just Tbilisi, Georgia is just a great place to enjoy wine. Almost every restaurant has their own house wine, and it's not expensive. It's very cheap.
Yeah. Wow, I love that.
I know. I really want to get Rem over to.
I've never been to that part of the world.
To that part of the world. Mm-hmm. I think that it would be so fun to go to Georgia and taste the wine.
Oh, yeah.
Turkey, you can see Azerbaijan, my old stomping grounds.
That would be crazy. That'd be really fun. And I would love to see with you.
Yeah.
This was delicious.
This is so good, Dad. It really is.
This number two, like, It's really great. It smells like it has champagne qualities.
It really does. It's
really, really enjoyable. Any guesses on, this is maybe ancillary, but on the apple varieties, any idea at all?
I have not the foggiest idea. Some of them are green, even when they're ripe, the green apples, sort of like Granny Smith's. Some are red, some of them are marbled with red and green. Cool. And some of them are small, some of them are big.
They're planted 100 years ago and the properties changed. I don't know how much documentation the hippies made back in the day either.
And the hippies probably wouldn't have known. This would have been the farmers that came, like you said, 100 years ago.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
So cool.
And Mendocino, well, it's like good apple growing country. It's northern half of California, cooler climate. I'm from Minnesota. We grow a lot of apples there as well.
Pops, how many bottles do you have left? How many have you guys gone through?
Oh, we've got a few left. Not a lot. I probably only have about 20 or 30 left.
Wow. How much? So I'm curious, how in each carboy, how many bottles did that make?
That's a good, they're about 5 gallons, but of course you don't get every bit of it out. That's something I'm going to do a little differently next year little siphon to get it out. This is very low tech. My little siphon required me to tip. It wasn't long enough, so I had to tip the bottle on the side. So next year I'm going to do it, and I'm just going to leave the bottom. I'm not going to tip the bottle. I'm going to have a siphon that's long enough that reaches down within a inch and a half of the bottom, and then I'm just going to leave the bottom, or else I'll just pour it off and drink it that way.
The winemaker's angel share.
So I have no, I don't know. I know I with the three carboys I did over 100 bottles, but I think about 120 bottles, something like that.
Wow, that's awesome.
And the biggest part of the work was actually cleaning the bottle, the beer bottles, recycling the beer bottles, getting the label off, getting them really convincingly sterile and clean.
Oh, wow.
So next year will be a lot easier, because whenever I give this to anybody, the joy of doing this is giving it away. So whenever I give it to somebody, now for you, you guys are off the hook because you're a long way off, but I always read them the Riot Act and tell them that they have to give back the bottles, because most of the work was getting the bottles clean. So
if you have
the bottles and you just give them a quick rinse, after you're done, then that's about half the work right there.
You know, our local Erewhon, which is about as hippie and tree huggery of a grocery store as you can get down here in Los Angeles, charges you an extra $2 for their bottle deposit, and you got to bring it back and get $2 back. So maybe. Cool.
Well, I'm gonna pop open number 3 here.
Boy, number 3. I'm assuming you've had all of these before.
Oh yeah. Oh yes.
This one's starting to fizz a little bit, huh? Should we
slowly?
Oh, you're actually uncapping it right now.
Doing it slowly.
Yeah, but number 1 we had to do in the sink.
But number 2 I popped right here and it was fine.
Yeah, go slow. Now it's not gonna explode, but what it could do is spew all over you.
I could get your glass ready too.
It's going down.
Is it slowing down a little bit?
It's slowing down.
Nice. We've had this with some pet nets.
Yes.
Kind of the natural wine equivalent of sparkling wine or champagne.
And they've got like the little bottle cap.
Yeah, it kind of looks like an oversized beer bottle. Is it at the top? Just hold your glass here.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. Just pop it and let it kind of spew over.
There we go. Yeah, I'll pop it open. Yeah, it's slowing down.
Yeah, I think it'll be okay.
No, I mentioned...
There we go.
This makes for good TV.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I mentioned to you that last year some of the bottles actually exploded. When I went to start doing the bottling this year.
Open it over the sink.
Okay.
Kendra's gonna go open this one over the sink. I'll catch up with you.
Last year when I started pulled out all the bottles out of the shed and everything, because Kenny kind of was the quarterback of this thing. He was the master winemaker last time, so. I needed to clean up the bottles and everything. And I pull out the bottles and there was one more left that had never been uncapped. And I thought, oh, cool. There's one more from last year's batch. And I took it to the, I knew it would be under pressure. I took it to the sink and I tried to do it slowly like you were doing it. And eventually I thought, well, I've got enough of the pressure out. And I popped the lid off And literally the wine jumped out of the thing. It, like a snake. It just jumped out of the bottle into the thing.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. It's under pressure. Real deal. Whoa, yay. This one color is different too.
I know.
Well, maybe also because if there's sediment on the bottom and it shook up a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened. That kind of brought up some of the sediment.
The pale caramely color. Do you have yourself poured the third one here?
Yeah, I got it here.
All right, this is sitting down. We'll give you a cheer.
Let me just make a toast. You know, where we lived on the other side of the world, giving toasts was a very important ritual. That's why you uncorked the bottle. And so I just want to toast what you're doing. You've already educated me. I've enjoyed drinking these natural wines that Kendra has brought up to us. And it's educated my palate to where I enjoyed the adventure, but I, it was a little strange to me. Now I've gotten to where I really enjoy that. And so I am just excited to be on the world's leading natural wine podcast here. And so, Saul,
may you prosper. Cheers. Thanks,
very,
Papa.
Very sweet toast.
That's so sweet. smells yummy.
Wow. This one's delicious again. I would.
So good. This is kind of in between the two.
Slightly in between the two. It's not as acidic as the first one. I can definitely. I don't. Who knows if it has like Brettanomyces. I don't even know if that applies to cider, but like a little barnyard funk to this one, I guess, if you could say.
Which we love.
which is like something called Brettanomyces is something Brett. I wish I knew more about how it actually exists in some wines, but it exists in some natural wines and some in different places in the world more than others, just because of higher concentrations and because they don't use preservatives like SO2 sulfur dioxide when during bottling. You can have sometimes abrasive amounts of barnyard or horse's hay or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. This is really nice, and I enjoy a little bit, but when it's like all you can taste, it's kind of a fault some people would consider.
But when there's just a little bit, it just gives it that kind of like funky, fun.
Yeah, a little gaminess, a little earthiness, mushroomy, earthy. Like along those type of the palate. But it's really good. So
super yummy.
The only difference here is bottled 2 days later. So for fermenting through two extra days, it bubbled over more than number two, who was
I think it was what I was saying before about my very low-tech heating technique in the shed is I think one of the carboys may have been a little further from the heat, and it might have been this one, and I think that's why I had that. When I did bottled the first two, I realized when I got to this one, I thought this one needs to ferment a little longer. I let it go another couple days, but I probably should have let it go a third day.
But
this is actually my favorite. I think this one, I like a little bit of the sweetness in there. I just think this has a nice flavor.
I agree. This one is the most flavorful, I think, for sure. And
I smell the apples most in this one.
Yeah, I agree.
I smell, what you think an apple smell, like an apple pie or an applesauce or something like this.
Yeah, like a more kind of like spiced apple.
Like a tart spice apple pie, yeah. It's really delicious. And as you mentioned, for anybody interested in like doing this, like it's, you can't not home ferment and disregard chemistry. Like, it's so important, and you have to take it into consideration in every little element. Like there's so many things you could tweak. And if you're not doing this in like a state-of-the-art facility, especially like at home with rudimentary tools and little band-aid fix-its along the way, like you're going to get wildly variable results, but I think it's like awesome how you've kept like little notes, and I think it's important. I think it's really fun to like, and then your toast, like it's an adventure, and your palate might not be used to it right away. And this is an extreme example, but we grew up on, or at least I did. I grew up in Minnesota, not Baku, but I'm in McDonald's high C and juice boxes my whole life, and we're used to sweet, 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 and getting something that's like nicely balanced and maybe more acidic than sugary, like takes a minute for your palate to adjust to, but the thing that like makes me enjoy it the most or like want to keep drinking it is hearing about the process.
Yeah.
The story. Everything tastes better with the story to me. So it's really cool what you're doing.
The fun thing about home brewing, whether it's wine or beer or cider, is, you know, we've been drinking this along the process. So, you know, you can, now this last, the actual last bottling, we were hoping that it would be ready to keep long-term, and we kind of probably should have had a little less sugar in there, obviously, as refining. But we were bottling some of it that we knew was too young. And that's okay because we're going to consume it in a few days. We had some of this for Thanksgiving. And that's part of the fun of it is you can bottle it and know that it's a perishable item and that you need to uncork it within a few days. And that's, we've kind of enjoyed, like you said, the story, the process.
Yeah. So I want to run through, it's kind of a growing trend. A lot of natural low intervention winemakers are very small operation. You're not gonna find them in your big Ralph's, Vaughn's, Safeway type of grocery stores, just because they're small operation, you know, a little larger than Nathan's operation and Kenny's operation, but really small relatively. But a lot of them are just farmers turned home brewers and, you know, where they got grapes growing, since this isn't a commercial operation, they have apple trees and it's the organic and biodynamic farming really promotes, not monoculture, but planting a variety of plants and fruit trees among certain crops. But America's, you know, we feed America on monoculture, which has its pros and cons. But there are a bunch of winemakers doing co-fermented grapes and wines together and coming out with really cool cider wine combos. And I just wanted to give a few shout outs to some of the natural winemakers that are also doing cider, some of them from just forage fruit on their property. So some of the cool cider wine co-ferments that we have are Art and Science in Oregon. They make natty wine and co-fermented wine, apples, grapes from leftover apples in Oregon. Old Westminster Winery, they're in Maryland. So a lot of these are going to be like cooler climate, grape growing regions where apples also grow as well. In Old Westminster, I actually find them if you're up in the Bay Area in Byright. Oh. Byright carries them.
Wow.
And they make some really fun wines. And Piquette, it's a whole other topic. We could talk about that some other time. Oyster River Wine Growers in Maine, another cool climate. Scar of the Sea, they're Central Coast, California. I've seen them around if you're in California at all. Wild Ark Farm in New York. And Zaffa Wines. So Krista Scruggs, she has a lot of press in the natural wine community. She does great things in Vermont. Really cool story with Krista there, but they work, I don't know if it's a brewery or just a cidery, and they do an awesome co-ferment, and they do it in barrels, and they do it right from the tap when you visit their tasting room.
Yeah.
So Zaffa Wines, that's probably one of the more popular ones that gets a lot of press. Chris has been doing really good things. So you can totally find it. And some of them just do cider on their own and some of them do co-ferment. So I've never had a wine, a grape apple co-ferment.
I haven't tried it yet either, but now I want to. It's very festive and perfect for this time of year around Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. I love the idea of bubbles with a little bit of cider in it.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Well,
Papa, you are inspirational, and this is so awesome and exciting. I feel like I've learned so much, and I can't wait for next year's batch, and we can taste together.
Yeah, I'm. I hope one day. I mean, I live in a box in Venice Beach. I have no fruit trees in sight. I am so jealous. I would love nothing more than to have fruit that I could pick, forage, take care of, and do something like this one day. So it's super inspirational, and I will be knocking on your door with questions.
Great. Well, come see us sometime. Come up and visit us here in Bigfoot Country.
I would love that. I love the I'm at home when I'm in the redwood trees, and your guys' place just looks beautiful, magical. So
it is. It's a magical place.
Well, thank you again, Papa. I love you so much. And
thanks for coming on the Natty Wine Podcast.
Yeah.
I love you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
To you and to Wait, let me get the name right again. What's Kenny's last name? Willard?
Willer Wagner Wilder Cider.
Willer Wagner Wilder Cider. Delicious.
WWW Cider Company. Cheers.
Cheers. Mm-hmm. Love you. Bye. Love you. Bye-bye.